Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast with me, Robbie Musto.
Hold on one second. Stop the music. It's not the Two Robbies. Oh, that's right. Where's Kick Earl? My music in there.
Where's Earl?
That's right. That's a dive, baby. Cross pod action. Mustinho.
Love it.
Robbie Earl could not make it, so we have joined.
Beautiful.
Two average podcasts together to make a just above average.
But I'm happy it was our music that started.
Do you like my tunes?
Not as much as ours.
You love a club beat. You like to get
my
moving.
My son
a little
picked
bit.
Our music.
Did
and
he?
I was not sure about it at the start, but I kind of like it.
Can he pick mine next year?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're gonna take my format if that's all right with
sure,
you.
Sure. Sure.
Here's how we work it, because I know you don't listen to my podcast.
Challenge.
Three topics, and I try to, and you're going to laugh about this because you work with me. I try to keep it to 10 minutes each topic, and producer Jorge, who typically sits where you're sitting, so I'm okay with letting you sit in the seat this time, he's going to keep us in line with a whistle.
We got big topics tonight, Carl. I'm not sure I can stick to that format.
Okay,
we've got big topics tonight.
To make you feel better, I blow by the whistle almost every
Beautiful.
Single time.
Well, that, yeah. That's good.
So it's more a guideline than a wall.
Okay.
So
okay,
let's stick with, since there's so much going on this weekend, I think we just stick with three topics from Manchester United Spurs. Because it was massive.
Huge game.
Absolutely massive. So I think we stick with three topics from that. Typically, I'll do my review stuff right now, but since you're here, I'm going to let you do what we typically do. We pick reviews, and we pick the fan that came up with the stadium they want to play or go see a game in. With the review, we say, I'm going to have you do it. You're going to be the review. You don't have to go review. I know you love my pod.
Okay.
But a stadium that you haven't been in as a fan you'd love to go see a game in, what stadium is it?
That would be, I've been in most of them, but I've not
Humble
been,
brag.
I've not been to Borussia Dortmund.
Oh, the yellow wall. Okay.
I'd love to see that with
Westfalen Stadium.
Yes, I would.
You
like
speak
to go
German
there.
Too, which is great.
Yes. Entschuldigen Sie bitte. Ich habe ein. Let's carry on.
This isn't about you.
Okay.
All right. So that's a good one. That's a really good one. So remember, put the reviews in for my pod. I can't do a promo for you. I don't know what you guys do.
I think we switch ours. You know,
okay.
we like to switch it up. So
yeah,
I'm not sure what we're going to go with. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So let's just get on
Something
to the topics
amazing.
Then. Okay. First topic, Manchester United Spurs 3-0. Well, 0-3. Spurs get their first win at Old Trafford under Pochettino, hadn't scored there in the four previous attempts. It was their voodoo ground. So let's start with topic one being Manchester United.
Okay.
What does this mean for Jose Mourinho and Manchester United? Are we in crisis territory?
Well, we had a chat about it midweek, Carl, and I said, well, you know what? We're not quite in crisis yet, but the next couple of games will determine, you know, the immediate future. And that scoreline, for me, now puts them in full crisis mode. There's so much to go at, mate. You know, in terms of what he did with the team, making six changes.
He surprised us a bit.
Well, yeah, he's surprised with the amount of changes.
Yeah.
And then the system of play. And to be fair, in the first half, the effort and the commitment was there, Carl. I think that's what we were first looking out for.
Reaction from
the
players.
Is there a reaction? With Pogba saying the attitude wasn't right, are they going to be up
at
for the
Brighton.
Game? And I think we both thought, you know what, for this game, they are going to be up for it.
Yeah.
And they were up for it.
We both
okay?
thought that.
So that argument, for now, gets put to bed.
Sure, check that. The players responded.
Right. Then, for me, that then brings a more of a worrying situation. Wow, hang on.
It was
You made
attitude.
All the changes.
Yeah.
You made the changes. All his reliable players, in inverted commas, were playing, the ones that we know he kind of prefers. They were all playing. He made his little change that you talked about, that he often makes a little quirky change in big games. Mm. He did that. And it seemed to be okay in the first half.
Herrera at center back.
At right side right center back.
Center back
just
with
watching
three.
For Dele running through from midfield. Yeah. I think that's why he was there for. It was an insurance policy.
Funny little thing on that. He trained them or showed us in warm-ups them as a back four.
Yeah,
just to mess with us.
Yeah. I've never seen anything like that. But unnecessary, weird.
Yeah.
But funny. So I just think the bigger picture on the scoreline, Carl, is like, well, hang on a minute then. So you picked the team, you made the changes, you did the tactics, you worked on it all week, and yet you lost 3-0.
Yeah.
So, you know, where does he go? Where does the team go after what we've seen tonight?
What's worrying for me is desperate United tends to be good United. So there are times where they have to chase games, or at the end, he throws players on. Mm. And I talked about this on the podcast last week. It's the way that they chase games, and he throws attacking players on the field without any real clear game plan or method for how they are going to get back into the game. How are they going to impose themselves, be more attacking minded, score goals and provide a threat? And I can never really make it out. And again, this game, he throws on three substitutions. One, he was forced because Jones got hurt, so he had to put on Lindelof. But then he puts on Fellaini, right, and Alexis. So two players that operate and are successful in totally different ways. So you want Alexis to get on the ball. You want fast, intricate combination play. And with Fellaini, you're gonna lump the ball up, and he's gonna bring it down. He's gonna flick it on. So you see this so often where I likened it last week on the pod to going into your closet and picking out your favorite clothes, but not seeing if they actually match and they work well together. And so that's concerning for me that, you know, it's been three seasons, almost a half $1 billion, and it still isn't clear what Jose Mourinho wants to do with this team, A, and B, he's complaining that it's not his team, it's not good enough.
Just on that topic, and I think you know me very well now, Carl, and when teams make substitution, well, we're both kind of similar. We look to see what's happening here. Why has he made that substitution? Is there a tactical change? Oh, they've gone from 5 to 4-4-2, or they've gone to a 4-3-3, or they've gone to a diamond, or they've gone to something else. When Jose starts making substitutions in the second half, Carl, I don't even bother.
Mm.
Because there's no point, because there's nothing to it. It's chaos theory.
Yeah.
It's like, throw him on, hopefully something's going to happen. The Fellaini thing was quite early today. That's normally plan C.
Yeah, so like it 75, goes wrong, 75
yeah,
minutes.
18
yeah,
minutes 80 and minutes. Throw it into the box. So yeah. That's a tactical side of it. I mean, why Rashford, Martial, Alexis, Juan Mata, the creative players at home, were left out of the team.
Well, not only left out of the 11, left out of the
some
team.
Of them.
I mean, Mata, Martial, no reports, no idea why they weren't even in the 18. Bailly, I mean, you would think dropped after performing poorly against Brighton, which is strange because Bailly was one of his first signings, or I think he was his first signing. I think Bailly is actually their best defender. And Smalling had an absolute shocker.
Horror
show.
The first game, and I know they didn't play well at Old Trafford, but I did the commentary there. It was great to be there, as we both were. Erik Bailly and Victor Lindelof played well.
Mm-hmm.
They played well. But don't just take it from me. Rio Ferdinand tweeted out after that game, wow, those two centre-backs played really great. They should now stay for a long time and gain chemistry. My goodness. The next game, they both had bad games, particularly Erik Bailly.
And he hooks them.
And it's gone.
And
so you're back to like Chris Smalling and Phil Jones. To be fair to them, Kyle, it's got to be difficult
to be
thrown in against Spurs.
And also thrown in next to Herrera. Right, so you're thrown into a game. You haven't been, not only have you not been starting, but you haven't been playing together. I mean, they'll probably be playing together in the B team anytime you do 11-on-11 against the first squad that's going to play on the weekend. But other than that, they probably worked on it during the week. But playing next to Herrera, who's not a center back, we all know that, who's a utility player the way Jose Mourinho uses him, it's tough. It's tough to be thrown in that situation. But I just go back to Jose Mourinho complaining that he doesn't have the center backs he needs. He bought Lindelof. He bought Bailly. He targeted them. So if they're not good enough, I don't blame Ed Woodward for saying, hold on a second, go look across town.
Absolutely.
At Pep Guardiola in Manchester City. Otamendi, we wouldn't have touched with a 10-foot pole, now looks like a Rolls Royce under Pep Guardiola. Mm-hmm. And just the unwillingness to manage out of a situation. It's just strange to think that Manchester United is the most difficult job he's ever had. It's the first time ever since his first job before Porto where he took over a team that finished below third the season before. It's the first time he's taken over a team that was a project. And I'm sorry, there's a good season in there for sure. And they got second last year. They were the best of the rest. Yes, I'm with you. This isn't all bad on Jose Mourinho. But the fact of the matter is, it always blows up in the third season. So if it does again this year, and you have players that the next manager doesn't want, you've invested $500 million into the squad and they're no better, and Jose Mourinho's criticizing your club, saying you drop out of the Champions League all the time. You know, last year, me not winning anything and finishing second is one of the best things I've ever done in my career. You know, all of these criticisms of the club, they tarnish the club, starting from day one when Sir Bobby Charlton said, not him, and you hired him in the face of a legend. You're depreciating the beauty and the magic of this incredible club for what? And that's my big thing. For what? For titles? If he doesn't get you one, then for what? Because it doesn't look like they're going to be anywhere near a title race this season.
I've just checked out social media and kind of general reaction. And there's a lot of reaction that I've heard and listened to about Ed Woodward, Kyle, about he hasn't backed the manager and he's an idiot and he doesn't know football and he should have brought in central defenders. I just think we need to rewind a little bit here and just take a bigger look at this. Over the period of time that Jose's been there and he's had long enough to assess his squad, he has been granted or given over $500 million to rebuild this core or rebuild the team. And we talked about it, Carl, I think maybe a year ago, maybe more than that, about Eric Bailly, about Nemanja Matic, about Romelu Lukaku that came in and like, wow, this is strong now. This is a Mourinho type. And back to your point about the two central defenders, they were brought in by him and he's now saying he needed new ones. Chris Smalling and Phil Jones came in today, not good enough. I just think if you're Ed Woodward, do you get to the point where, hang on a minute, Jose, you've got that amount of players, that amount of investment, and we're at a situation now where you are scrambling to field a team that has any kind of cohesion to put a performance together against Spurs. And we're all, and him afterwards are saying, wow, great reaction, great attitude, they're with me. Well, that's even worse then, because you can't get a good performance given a group of players expensively assembled that are motivated.
Well, here's the thing. It's not mutually exclusive. Ed Woodward deserves blame, but he can solve it. You know, he solves it. He hires a director of football, and they're trying to do that. Ed Woodward should not be doing some of the things that he's doing. He's a commercial guru who, by the way, has brought in a ton of sponsorship dollars while Manchester United have failed on the field. So that's incredibly impressive. He can solve it by hiring a technical director. How does Jose Mourinho solve the fact that he doesn't seem he has the technical nous or the gifts and the tricks that he used to have to get out of moments like this? Because Ed Woodward also solves his problem by firing Jose Mourinho. So Mourinho, I think, has now drawn a line in the sand, and he's on one side with the smallest group he's ever had on that side of the sand, and it's the few fans that stayed after in the Stretford end, and he went over there, which was smart of him, to try to say, here are the people that understand football. They're behind me. They get it, right? I mean, I've never seen anything like that when he went over and clapped them.
He made a big deal of that and stayed there longer to make sure the camera was there with him looking at the fans with that little appreciation. He's fighting for his job, Carl Martino, and we got a very interesting little bit of sound from after the game. We heard from him afterwards, and we put it on our air on our show, but we knew there'd be extra reaction, and we want to run now just a little piece of the interview that happened directly after the game.
Now, just to finish, do you know that what was the result? 3-0. 3-0. Do you know what this means? 3-0. But also mean 3 premierships, and I won more premierships alone than the other 19 managers together. 3 for me and 2 for them. Respect. Respect. Respect, man. Respect.
I mean, wow. I know the whistle's coming any second now. Oh, there it is. But we need a comment on that. So he's fighting for his job.
Yep.
It's remarkable insecurity to have to constantly tell everyone how great you are, because he is great and we all know it. He's one of the best ever. It's just when he starts listing his accomplishments, he starts losing me. Where are you with that press conference and all of the criticism, obviously, that's going to come his way after the game?
Right. Well, first of all, so that there, again, trying to convince everybody how great he is. And also directly after the game in the post-match interview where he's saying, we worked on it great. The attitude is great. But
technically
saying,
we were perfect.
Yeah, it was nothing to do with my tactics. Yeah. He's basically throwing the defenders under the bus again. And yes,
And Lukaku, because he said we should have been up. So he's throwing his defenders and his attacking player, his best goal scorer, under the bus.
Do you know when we experience in this, Carl, and of course we've seen Mourinho do great things in English football. I do have something in my brain that keeps saying to me, calm down a minute. This guy, he's won things. He's a winner. He's won titles. He's won titles at Manchester United. Can it be his fault? Can it be other people's fault? But that's why I wanted to go back with the numbers. You know, the money, how much he's had, the time that he's had, what I see in terms of tactics, which never is going to impress us, but the winning's been there. And I do try and check myself to sort of think, am I right here, me and you at times, like just criticizing this guy from what we see, and I still in a measured way have to say yes Yes, yeah. It's not good. It's not Man United football. The money and everything else says this job is too difficult for him, Kyle.
Here's the thing. He can still be a great manager and the wrong person for Manchester United. That's possible. Mm. And that's the case for me. Big question, then we'll move on to the next topic. Mm. Does he last the season?
I think he does last the season.
Wow.
I think that he's a fighter. I think United will not want to be another one of those clubs that every season getting a new manager. I think at some point he'll get them a little bit. They'll limp. They'll limp forward. For me, with the you said earlier, they're going to look to change the structure. Mm-hmm. They're going to bring in a director of football ready for the next era of this football club, which doesn't include Jose Mourinho. I just think unless there's a massive meltdown incident where it's like, wow, it's a little bit untenable. Mm-hmm. He's got to go. I think he'll limp through, Carl.
Which would mean it's only the second time ever in his great career that he's made it into a fourth season. And also,
I'm saying there, it will limp to the end and then
So you think they do this in the summer?
There's a slow process now of restructuring and finding somebody else for the summer. Now, if there's an implosion, then there'll be an interim.
You can't say both. I'm sorry. Okay, you're on record that you think he's going to stay the season.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, that's it.
But the thing changes that is if he has an implosion, then I'm wrong.
Then
I'm wrong.
Who knows?
What do you think? Do you think there's going to be an implosion?
I can't see him lasting the season. Because, listen, Manchester United weren't the type of club to hire a guy like that before they hired him. And now they can't say, well, we're Manchester United. You know what? This won't happen to us because we're different. It's happened to every club. No club's different. Real Madrid's not different. Chelsea's not different. Every club he goes to, it collapses at the end. Why would Manchester United be different?
They'd be admitting a mistake then, wouldn't they? Would they admit a mistake by hiring him? He's won titles, Europa League.
The best manager, and in this case I'm saying Ed Woodward, the best business people understand their mistake before it's obvious and admit it and move on. And so we're going to move on to Spurs.
More positive things, please.
Because it couldn't be a bigger contrast. What a day for Spurs at Old Trafford. Hmm. What are your immediate takeaways?
The people underestimate Spurs. I've done that in the past. I was not doing it again this season. I had them out of the top four last season, and they proved me wrong. And I thought, you know what? They're a good team last year. They're going to be a good team this year. I know they didn't bring any new players in, but they're a good team. They've got some players come back from injury. Harry Winks came on the field today. I think he's a really good midfield player. Lucas Moura is different as a wide player and as a striker. And at the moment, he's looking in these three games, my goodness, what a good decision to play as a front two with him and Harry Kane. More support, more goals, more pace, more dribbling. Different, Kyle. Different. We were looking for something different from Spurs to take him up a level. Now, I know it's only three games, and he might go off. His form might dip. But I'm excited about Spurs. I'm excited for the manager because him and this team get a lot of, not stick, but like, you've got to win something. You know, players are going to leave. You've got to win something. And I marvel at what he's done there with the budget. Excuse me, that's nowhere near like United. The net spend that's incredibly fractional compared to Manchester United, and yet he still gets an entertaining, youthful, dynamic team on the field of play.
Well, here's the thing. I totally agree with you on all of that. They have to win at some point. So,
why do they have to win?
Because at the end of the day...
What if they don't? What, you're going to fire them because they don't win?
No, I'm not talking knee-jerk. I'm just talking about everything we celebrate. One of the things that I actually do, I sympathize with Jose Mourinho, is the guy just wins everywhere, just wins trophies and standing on the podium lifting a trophy at the end of the day.
He's been at brilliant, massive clubs, Carl. Pochettino hasn't.
Yeah, I understand that. But listen, they've been cup finals and they've been close. They just can't get it over the line, right? So it's not as if, I mean, three seasons in a row, they were the most consistent team in the Premier League. And I'm with
Which
you
is amazing.
That I respect that. And I think that's incredible. And I just hope that this thing stays together long enough to get in the new stadium, to get the investment, to get over that last hurdle, because I think Pochettino's good enough.
Yeah.
I think the squad is good enough, and the criticism is overblown. But it is fair to place that seed to say this team has to start winning trophies at some point. I mean, Wigan won the FA Cup the year they got friggin' relegated. So at some point, you got to start winning trophies. But today, and we're taping this right after this incredible game with Spurs going to Old Trafford, it was a special day because they didn't strengthen in the offseason, but they're better. And I have them in the top four again. I had them in the top four last year because I believe Pochettino makes players better. Mm. I believe that he's the type of manager, if you give him a project and you give him time, he's going to get the best out of the group. He also has a great tactical mind where we saw him make an adjustment. You know, today he went with a back four and dropped Sanchez. And I thought to myself, man, drop in one of your most powerful, and I think one of your better one-on-one defenders in a game against Lukaku is a big call. But he does it, and he brings Eric Dier in the midfield position with Dembele and plays a diamond with a strike partnership, something he did at times last year. But I just love that he's thinking about how do we get these advantages, and he must have worked on Lucas Moura and seen this is where I get the best out of him. Mm. You know, Eriksen, Dele Alli.
Yeah, you get Eriksen the hole.
He knows how to move these players around and give them freedom and give them roles where they're going to thrive. And I just saw in the second half why everyone lionizes him and why everyone thinks he's such a great manager, because they didn't perform well in the first half.
They didn't.
It could have been really easy to come out flat and say, man, this is our bogey ground. This is going to be difficult. But they showed a mental stability. They showed a togetherness. They showed a continuity that only comes from trusting in your players and working with them, making sure they understand that you know they can be better. And they don't need to be replaced. Now, at some point, they need to be challenged because complacency can hurt your squad. Mm. But I just looked at that performance and thought to myself, this is a team that if there's any team that keeps up with City and Liverpool, it's going to be Spurs.
Isn't it? I mean, just to continue that, Danny Rose. I mean, in a game like that, I mean, a player that's had a bit of a mixed relationship with the manager, he played him at Old Trafford. I thought, wow, Ben Davis has been your guy. He's been your guy at left back. He's forced his way in. He's got ahead of Danny Rose. And yet Danny Rose and Aldo Real, two players that, you know, thought they were going to be leaving, he played them in the team. And one of the things that maybe hasn't been blown up as much as it should have been is this statement. Lukaku missed, Kane scored. Mm-hmm. And in that period of time.
Lukaku missed a sitter and Kane scored a very difficult, spectacular header.
And we always talk about defining moments. I mean, those two were iconic in terms of what I remember from that game in terms of the goal scoring that Lukaku went through, and it's his weaker foot. And you know what? I kind of thought he would miss, Kyle.
Really?
Yeah, with his right foot. It wasn't that easy, but you'd expect him to score. And then Kane's header was something, you know, miraculous contact, and timing.
One other name that popped out from the performance, two defenders, one Luke Shaw. You know, not a lot of positives for Manchester United, but Luke Shaw looks dangerous again, looks confident again. Mourinho went immediately up to him, put an arm around him, you know, I'm sure a word in his ear. And listen, Mourinho's been awful with him, but got to give Mourinho credit here. He's starting him, he's playing him. Luke Shaw, whether it's his response, whether it's because of Mourinho or not, Luke Shaw looks great again, which is good for United.
Yeah.
Alderweireld was out of it. And with Pochettino, typically, what I love about Pochettino is he doesn't air his dirty laundry. He keeps us guessing. We don't really know what's going on. He doesn't throw people under the bus. He doesn't make these public. But behind the scenes, if you challenge him, if you go against the group, he typically just, you're gone. You're dead to him. He kept him out of the side for so long. He brings him back in this game. He's one of their best performers on the day. His contract's up at the end of this year.
He won't sign a new contract.
And here's the thing. Either they sign him to a new contract, big wages, and there's a release clause, or they say, you know what, it's worth it to lose him for free, because if he helps us get into Champions League, new stadium, I mean, he earns whatever we would have got, you know, for him anyway. Because, I mean, you're talking about a $90 million swing right there if they fail to get into Champions League. So however he did it, Alderweireld is back on board, which for Spurs is...
It's just amazing. Bigger picture. I thought this game, I think me and Rob talked about it on our Saturday show, that a winner would be a strong message to the top of this league table. With Spurs winning this game, Carl, at Old Trafford, 9 points, 3 wins out of 3, in terms of continuity and where they've been and what they need to improve just to go over that line, is Spurs going to be a real serious title contender throughout the season?
So I think that Spurs will
just a gut. I mean, at this point, after 3 games, just a gut feeling, isn't it, from me right now?
I think they will keep up with Liverpool and Manchester City through Christmas, and I think the new stadium is going to give them a bit of a bounce, kind of like a new manager bounce. I think that they will fall off in the last few months because they really aren't that deep when you look through it. And just kind of lose pace with the front runners, but finishing top four without spending a penny. And listen, maybe in the Christmas, maybe in the January window, they do strengthen. But new stadium, You haven't taken on more debt by signing new players. You've signed a couple new players to longer contracts. Maybe in January you grab a player or two. I think they keep up with the pack but fall just away. But if they finish top four, it's, I mean, that's a successful season. It has to be based on the big picture of what's going on with Spurs.
And the talk, of course, is always a cliche, isn't it? If you don't spend money and stand still, then you're going backwards in this league. I'm not sure whether that's going to be the case. You know what I think could be a determinant here is the Champions League. So in February, of course, the knockout stages begin, the high-pressure games, the difficult games, etc., with the Champions League. If there's a scenario where City, Liverpool, whoever else is up there, Chelsea, United, if they can rebound, if they go deeper and Spurs don't, then I absolutely think Spurs can go right to the end in challenging. Hmm. But if they do it equally as well in the Champions League, I'm kind of with you, that there's just not quite enough there to manage the Premier League on top of a Champions League run, given the strength of City and given the improvement of Liverpool. So it's a difficult one, but...
Here's one thing I worry about with Spurs that I think they've got some good news about recently is the defensive midfield position. I think Dembele is reaching just past that expiration point, as good as he is, and I think he's brilliant. He's one of my favorite players to watch. I think he has been outstanding, an unsung hero for them. Knits the team together, glides with the ball, good defensively, composed. I just think he's fallen a bit past it now, not being relied upon and also struggling with injuries regularly. Harry Winks can be what everyone thinks he can be, that's the X factor. If Harry Winks starts to come into his own, much like Dele Alli did in his first season, if Harry Winks becomes that guy, I think that's the swing for Spurs. That one player could actually end up meaning a lot.
I couldn't agree more. And also, let me chuck in Victor Wanyama.
Yeah.
Now, I know he's got a pretty serious knee injury, but a player that for me, when he's at his best, would be the holding player. And then Winks would fit in around him and balance off with Dele or Eriksen. So that midfield could be better. But we'll have to wait and see on Winks and, of course, Wanyama.
Let's continue that into the third topic of top four. So this game... two top four contenders. I mean, that is there a swing? Does today change how you feel about the top four and where Spurs and Manchester United are going to finish?
Well, I had Spurs in there and I had Manchester United in there. Spurs, of course, now, you know, I have no reason to doubt that. Of course, I have to have reason to doubt Manchester United's ability to get in that top four. I'm not prepared at the moment to say I think I got that wrong. And I'm changing my prediction. I'm just not. I just, even though I've admitted they're in a crisis and they are, I still believe that the squad and even the manager, or if somebody else comes in, there's enough in that football club, in that dressing room, to get them in the top four. But for sure, there's a massive question mark over that right now.
So of the teams that you don't have in the top four...
Yep, Chelsea and Arsenal.
Yeah. Who, based on what Chelsea. You've seen so far, has a better chance to get...
Yeah. I think Chelsea do. We watched their game, of course, against Newcastle United, and lots of pluses, a few negatives for me. The tippy-tappy nature of that game worried me a little bit. Now, you can blame the Newcastle tactics for that, but penetration's got to be found. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just has. But he found it with Napoli. It's still early yet, but I really like what I saw with Sarri at Napoli. Some of the games in the Champions League against City and stuff and other league games were amazing football. So that's got to improve. Defensively, he's already admitted, which I found very strange, that, I'm not worried about my defensive tactics. It usually takes my teams 2 or 3 months to figure out a defensive phase. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe that.
2 or 3 months?
That's what he said, in confidence. People were like, what about your defensive play? It doesn't look secure. He said, I'm not worried about my defensive phase. It normally takes my new teams 2 or 3 months to improve.
Well, it normally takes Abramovich 2 or 3 months to start interviewing new coaches and getting a short list together. Holy cow.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. I agree. On paper, Chelsea are a better squad, better talent, better depth than Arsenal. I think that Chelsea's start to the season looks shinier and looks nicer than Arsenal does. And I honestly don't think it tells the truth. Strength, obviously, of schedule. It's been easier for Chelsea to start the season than it has been for Arsenal. I mean, to start with Manchester City in a game that they didn't perform well in but improved as the game grew on. And here's the thing is there wasn't much between them at Stamford Bridge. Arsenal showed
Chelsea,
that they could easily get behind that Chelsea back line, which was concerning.
Yep.
I think Emery is not as committed to and not as obstinate with his philosophy as Sarri is. Sarri is with this 4-3-3, 4-3-3 or dime, and this is what he wants to do. And you can see Emery tweaking a bit. I mean, he really is trying to get to know his squad, and he keeps finishing games with the group I think he should start games with. He keeps finishing by bringing on Torreira, who gives them mobility. He gives them bite. He's very
energy,
clean and simple with his play. He's not trying to be the big playmaker. He's happy to bring players into the game and do the dirty work for them, which there hasn't really been an Arsenal player like that for some time. You know, Elneny has tried to do that. Chaco's tried to do that, but I really don't think either of them do it as well as the Uruguayan. I think then when you have that bite, you can play a Guendouzi. You can play someone, or even if it's Ramsey, you can play someone who wants to be a bit more silky and offer something attacking-minded.
But they've got a lot of people that want to give that.
Yeah.
How do you bring in Aubameyang and Lacazette and Ozil and Mkhitaryan and find the balance, Carl?
You can't bring them all. You can't bring them all in. So I think what we're seeing is Aubameyang and Lacazette have to play at the same time. If they play at the same time, Aubameyang has to play off the left.
Right.
And so then you have Mkhitaryan off the right.
I'm just thinking of two players that are not going to want to get involved defensively unless the coach says, you know what, I don't care. You're going to play. You're playing there, and you've got to get back in to help out those midfield players.
Mkhitaryan works back. Mkhitaryan works back.
He was at fault, wasn't he? Was it this weekend where he didn't track his fullback? He crossed it for the goal. I'm not sure which weekend it was now. I think it was against. I think it was a Chelsea game. Unless they improve, unless the coach improves that part of it, it's going to make it difficult for those two guys in midfield.
Yeah,
Torreira,
I agree.
And Guendouzi,
it's
balance. It's all about balance. Isn't
you're talking about. Are you playing Mkhitaryan? Are you playing Mesut Ozil? Are you playing Ramsey? Are you playing Iwobi? I mean, here are the choices you have. I think you can only play two of the four of that group, right? I mean, I think you can't take Aubameyang off the field. Even though he's missed some chances. Listen, missed loads of chances at Borussia Dortmund. You have to keep him in.
Yeah.
Lacazette deserves to start.
Yep.
So now all of a sudden, you're running out of spots, and I think you need Ramsey because he covers more ground than most groups. I give Ramsey that central role.
So what's our setup here?
I've got two holders with Ramsey ahead.
Okay.
And I let Guendouzi join from time to time. You can invert.
Okay.
You can do
as
an inverted
triangle.
There's
your three then. There's your three midfield players right there.
Yeah.
So it's just wide right.
Wide right. That's where you rotate. That's where Ozil gets a chance. That's where Mkhitaryan gets a chance. But here's the thing: is we're all wondering about Mesut Ozil, their highest paid player, was out of the team the last game for illness, and I'm not happy with that explanation because he also went and sat in the locker room with the team for an hour or so. If he's ill, he shouldn't be in there. I mean, he's going to get other players sick. And the illness was a cold. Musto, do you know anyone who's missed a game for a cold in your entire playing career? I can't tell you one person, I definitely didn't, who missed a game with a cold. And that's how many times? Six or seven times?
Can I give you some data and facts?
Do it.
Since December 2016, he's missed a game through illness six times.
Six
times.
That's insane. I
think I might have had food poisoning once in 18 years. I think that's about it.
I was getting injections, playing with tendons that weren't even on the bone anymore and getting surgery in the offseason, which is, by the way, why I retired at 28. So maybe I should have sat out more, but I just can't imagine that you wouldn't do everything you can. And that's the big concern, right, with Mesut Ozil. It's never a question of talent. He's one of the most talented players in the world. Talent is never the question.
Would you have signed him for a longer contract? Or would you let him go on for free?
I think at that point, it's such a hard one because you know me, I love Mesut Ozil. I think I might have let him go.
Of the two players, I remember the thought being, you know what, I think Alexis will stay on, I think Ozil will go. I think that's what the general consensus was, and it's been reverse of that. As if Ozil had a little sweet purple patch of games, Carl, where he assisted, he looked great, he looked sharp. He got that contract, that huge contract. And I just feel now that Unai Emery has been left with this £350,000 a week problem.
Yeah.
This change in his style, his tactics, his man management's been affected by this guy. Maybe I'm overreacting, but wow, he's got a problem there.
If Manchester United's path to top four is through Mourinho and Pogba getting along and figuring it out and getting the best out of Pogba, then Arsenal is absolutely hinging on how does the Emery-Mesut Ozil relationship work? And he's showing tough love. He substituted him early in the game, which Arsene Wenger rarely did.
Yeah.
Remember, and he just took ages to get off the field. Emery's trying to show him tough love at the beginning.
Great.
And listen, Jose Mourinho showed him tough love at Real Madrid, and that ended up working out okay. I mean, he performed well for Real Madrid.
But it's different, isn't it? It's different because Real Madrid dominated every game, 80%, and he could
flit around. I'm just saying, this isn't the first manager to show him some tough love. Mm. But it is a different scenario where he thinks he should be playing every week, no question. So, that's a tough problem for Emery early in his tenure. But I just think for Arsenal, I have them in my top four. Not a lot of people do. I just see enough talent in the squad. I see a great recruitment team behind the scenes, a structure that can work. I absolutely think it's going to take some time. Mm. And we
you
all
still
know.
Believe.
We all know. I see a fractured group, as talented as they are, with Chelsea. I don't like N'Golo Kanté in an advanced position. I think there are other players that play that role better. And I think that Chelsea are vulnerable with Jorginho as a holder. It worked at Napoli. It's a slower pace in Serie A. I mean, he's brilliant on the ball. But remember what Pep Guardiola told us when we were over there about the Community Shield? He told us that tactically, their strategy was to get at Jorginho and get in behind him, which they did a lot in that game. And if you go watch tape, Jorginho is out of position constantly with groups getting in between the lines behind him. And Kanté, just from an advanced position, isn't going to be able to cover that much ground.
But I'm prepared to wait out and see and look and see what Sarri's thinking. Obviously, he values the passing ability, the defensive nature of keeping the ball above anything else. So he wants to defend with the ball, which means that Jorginho is going to be there to keep it, to keep switching play, to make some through passes.
Yes.
And N'Golo Kanté will do his forward runs and will get back and try and help when he can. Of course, we all know what N'Golo Kanté has been brilliant at. But if you play him there and Jorginho somewhere else, it's different and it's not as effective if keeping possession and being silky and smooth and switching a point of attack and 100 million touches.
Let me ask you this.
I'm willing to see what this happens. I'm willing to go with this.
Let me ask you this, though. This will be the last question, last word on it. If you're the manager of Chelsea,
you
know how Sarri plays. You watched his Napoli side. You get what he's trying to do. You've watched N'Golo Kanté now under Leicester, at the World Cup with France, and a title-winning team with Chelsea. If you were going to build a team around Jorginho or Kanté as a manager, which would you build the team around?
I'd build it around both of them.
But you can't.
You can.
Well, in a different system. Not the way that he's playing.
In two systems. So the team plays two systems at once.
Okay.
So out of possession, they play side by side.
Yep.
And others switch around. And in possession, I want Jorginho as the pivot man. And I want Kanté doing something
different. Here's why Sarri won't do that. He wants to press. And he likes N'Golo Kanté's energy. Yeah. And he wants to win the ball further up the field. So he's not going to do that. That is how you solve the problem. But
yeah, we rarely see that, by the way, of two different way of playing with and without the ball. I just think with Chelsea, it's so obvious in terms of the flow of the game because they possess so well that I want Jorginho there in this Chelsea lineup.
It's in a way, it's kind of what we talked about with Pep last year. Will the Premier League change Sarri, or will Sarri change the Premier League? Because the paradigm and what we all think is this is how you play N'Golo Kanté in the Premier League. If it works with him advanced, with Jorginho holding, and the Premier League doesn't seem to agree that works, then Sarri has won. I mean, he has bent the Premier League to his will.
Mm. Yeah, and I just don't think it will change. You might see side by side in a slightly different system, but for me, you're not going to see ever under Sarri N'Golo Kanté playing the holding guy at all times. Mm.
Well, that's it for this one, the cross pod. So should we do both of the sign-offs? Should we try your sign-off?
Well, Earl does the sign-off, but here's the music. So you'll go ahead and sign us off.
Oh, it's been an amazing... It's literally been the most amazing day in the Premier League. It's just chop, 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 chop out on the field. Bobby Zamora played excellent.
Oh, what's that? What's my that music? Turn. What's this, a splimming? Spanish, what's this?
So
what the heck is this?
It's just been amazing. That's good night from me.
Oh, and it's good night from him.
Good night. Stay on your feet.